celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. This is Canucks Connected.
Daniels in the slot. Olin moves up, shoots, hit it,
weekly look back that focuses on all the chills.
Ground, a long pass to Pavel Bure. In the clear, right in. Yeah, it scores! Pavel Bure has won it in overtime.
And thrills.
Campoli has it. Flips it. Burrow steals. Cutting in. Shoots. Scores! They've slain the Dragon!
Of a half century of Canucks hockey, here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Canucks Connected. It's our weekly profile of members of the Canucks Alumni Association as they celebrate 50 years of NHL hockey in Vancouver. I'm your host, Joey Kenward. You know, with all that's gone on the last number of weeks, it's fair to say that hockey might not be the top priority for many of us these days. Personal health, mental health, and making sure those around us are healthy should all be top of mind at a time like this. I sure hope that over the next hour, this show can provide some awesome memories and highlight some significant moments for Canucks fans at a time when NHL hockey in Vancouver started to be taken to a whole new level. And the two guests we have set to join us were some of the biggest fan favorites during their days at the Pacific Coliseum. Before we get to them, I want to remind you, though, that in case you're not already aware, the Canucks alumni has a brand new website. It's been posted for a few weeks now, and it's got all you need to know on what the alumni do day in and day out, whether they've been on the ice or in the community. Check out the website, and it's easy to remember, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. Plus, they're very active on social media. They've got their own Facebook page, plus they're on Instagram and Twitter. All of them use the same handle, @CanucksAlumni. Be sure to stay with us. Later on in the show, we're going to look back at some of the more significant trades made in Canucks history. Plus, we highlight some of the many memorable moments on the Canucks calendar when we take a look back at this week in Canucks history. Right now, though, let's profile our first alumni member, who after growing up playing hockey in the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island, joined the Canucks in the late 1970s. And went on to a career in hockey that's lasted more than 40 years.
Today's first player profile is on former Canucks forward, Curt Fraser.
Jim Mill. Curt Fraser shoots. Score! Curt Fraser.
Fraser going at it with Lacombe right in front of the Edmonton bench. There, toe-to-toe. There goes Lacombe's helmet.
Curt Fraser was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, when his dad was playing pro hockey there in the late 50s. But he'd grow up in North Vancouver in the 60s and early 70s. He'd have a standout career in the Western Hockey League with the Victoria Cougars, which led him to being drafted by the Canucks in the second round in 1978. He'd step into the Canucks organization right away, playing on a line with fellow rookies Stan Smeal and Thomas Gradin, and when he wasn't putting up points, he was often dropping the gloves, establishing himself as one of the toughest players in the NHL. Fraser would play 12 years in the league, racking up over 1,300 penalty minutes. And not long after retiring, he got into coaching, which saw him work as a head coach in the NHL, the minors, in Europe, and most recently in China. I caught up with Fraser at his off-season home in Dallas, Texas, and started out by asking him, as a kid growing up in the Lower Mainland, was he always a big Canucks fan?
You know what? I really was, and it was great, you know, but it was strange because I played minor hockey at the North Shore Winter Club, and then when I was 15, I went and joined the Kelowna Buckaroos, you know, a Tier 2 team in BC, in the BC Junior League, and then all of a sudden I wound up in Victoria, so this is all, like, I'm a Vancouver kid, and I'm playing hockey in, you know, in BC, and then I get drafted by the Canucks, you know, and the agent I had then said, you're going to be going to Philadelphia. And I said, oh, really? You know, like, it never even occurred to me that I'd have an opportunity to go play for the Vancouver Canucks. But when it happened, I mean, it was perfect. You know, BC kid, grew up in Vancouver, played for the Vancouver Canucks. It couldn't have been any better.
Before you became property of your hometown team, you mentioned the fact that you played in the WHL with the Victoria Cougars, and we're talking about a team from the late 70s that into the 1980s was a really tough, competitive, and skilled hockey team on Vancouver Island. You left there as the organization's all-time leader, I think, in so many different categories, goals, assists, points, and penalty minutes. What are some of the great memories you have from playing in BC's capital in the Western League?
Even there, it was crazy. You know, every time we went to play an away game, you know, you're on the ferry, you travel on the ferry, then it's like, you know, we were going to Portland, New Westminster, and other than that, and it's sad, Seattle came in later, but then after, if you wanted to go play games anywhere, it was way out in the prairies, you know, and my first couple of years was all the way to Flin Flon, Manitoba. And so we covered a lot of ground in those days, spent a lot of time in the bus, and but again, you know, it was a real good education for me, and it toughened me up in those 4 years playing for Patty Canal, and the teammates I had were, like you said, it was a very rugged team. We had to be to play against teams like New Westminster and Portland, but that's the way hockey was back then, and you know, you either stepped up and grew up fast, or you kind of fell off to the side, and we had a great group. I couldn't have played with better teammates when I played in junior hockey. And started with Mel Bridgman when I was 16. He was our captain, and he taught me a lot. And the first scrimmage we had, it was an inter-squad game. And it was all Cougars. And the very first shift, I was a center. He was a center. And my dad, I just remember him saying, "You got to do something to stand out. Do something different, otherwise, you know, nothing's going to happen." So, anyway, they dropped the puck, and we dropped the gloves. This is the first shift of an inter-squad game, and it started a bench-clearing brawl. There was 4,000 people in the building back then, and that's how my hockey career in junior started, like, you know, for the Western Canadian Hockey League. And anyway, after the game, we got finished up, and Bridgman came over to me and said, "Come on, kid, you're coming with me, going back to my place for some deep." So I ended up kind of, you know, he took me under his wing and looked after me that whole year. He got drafted first overall to the Philadelphia Flyers, and I couldn't have been more fortunate to have a guy like that look after me the first year and introduce me to the Western Hockey League.
Curt Fraser is our guest today on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. Well, you had just, as I mentioned, a standout WHL career in Victoria, which led to being picked 22nd overall in the NHL by the Canucks in 1978. What do you remember about the draft? Everybody has, it seems, very unique memories about how they had their name called out. What do you remember about that day, Curt?
It was nothing like it is now. We were in a room in Toronto. I guess that's where it always was held then. And anyway, we were sitting in a small room. There might have been 50 players there, and just the teams, just a table with a general manager and maybe a coach. I can't even remember. But it was very small, and you got called up, walked up. They gave you a jersey and a hat. Kind of similar to what it is now, but there was nothing there. There was no crowd. There was no people. It was just very quick, quiet, and that's the way it was back then. So it was, like I said, it was very different for me to be selected by my hometown team. And, you know, me being a big fan of them and then getting an opportunity to go play for the Vancouver Canucks was very lucky and very fortunate for myself.
You were picked in the second round. Stan Smeal, who had been the captain of the New West Bruins, was picked in the next round. So you two come to your first training camp, and right away the coaches put you on a line for your first practice as an inter-squad game with another rookie. And Thomas Gradin was a little bit older, but he had come over from Sweden and had never played in North America. It didn't take long for your line to turn heads and even be nicknamed the Kid Line. How special was that moment when you talk about getting your feet wet wearing an NHL jersey for the first time?
Well, yeah, I can actually remember the very first shifts that we played together. You know, Stan Smeal and I played against each other for 5 years of junior, and you know what kind of a player he was, and we were always bumping heads, and both of our teams were big, strong, rugged hockey teams, and so we were just used to that. You know, we were used to having to be, you know, hitting hard and battling and scrapping for every inch ice. So when we showed up to the Vancouver camp, the first scrimmage, we got thrown together, the three of us, and we were sitting there, standing there with each other, and I can remember it clear as day. We said, okay, you know, let's want to make this team. You know, we're gonna do whatever it takes. And the three of us just kind of nodded at each other and said, okay, we lined up, dropped the puck, and it was game on. But we didn't know that the veteran guys from the Canucks back then, you know, our Chris Ottlesen and Kernsey and, all these guys, Bervegard, Settlebar, they were used to coming to camp then to get in shape. And here, all of a sudden, you got three kids, two of them which came out of the Western League and were used to running around and hitting and battling. And we started like that the very first day of camp. And I just remember after the first couple of shifts, we skated by the bench, Steamer and me, and the veteran guys were yelling at us, like, hey, slow down, you know, take it easy. And we're like, oh, my God, what the heck's going on? Anyway, we started fast. For some reason, the three of us clicked and stuck together, and we ended up playing together for 5 years. So, again, another lucky situation. I think there was 10 rookies on the team that year. They wanted to change everything around. And we had come out of, you know, Stan Smith and myself had come out of two teams that were very successful and did well, and we were used to that. And then Thomas Gradin was like, they used to say that poor Thomas Gradin, he'd be a much better player, but he wasn't playing with two plumbers. And anyway, it was, for some reason, we stuck together. It worked, it clicked, and we really had a great time playing together.
And that line would stay intact for a number of seasons, culminating with your team's magical playoff run in 1982, which, of course, for the first time as an organization, the team made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. You didn't win it. You didn't get a chance to hoist the Holy Grail. But when you look back on it now, Fraze, how special a moment was that to be a hockey player in Vancouver?
It was like nothing you could imagine. Like, we started off, we got into the playoffs, and we played against the Calgary Flames the first round. And they were a big, tough team. And the only way we were going to get by this team is we had to match them physically. So right away, they start Stan and I, and out we go, and the first puck drops, and right away, there's fights and battling, and our team just came together, caught fire. It actually happened 22 games before that in an off-ice altercation in Quebec City that kind of maybe started everything for us. It was a fight kind of thing, and moved into the stands, and it was a crazy night. And all of a sudden, you know, if you look back, you know, they switched to Harry Neal as the coach. Roger, he got suspended. Roger Nielsen took over. And right from that point on, the team just came together. And for some reason, it clicked, and our guys just, we went on a run. Our record in the last 20 games that year was incredible. And then we hit the playoffs, and like I said, we just weren't going to accept no for an answer, and we just kind of came out and matched them physically. We got by Calgary, played L.A., we beat Edmonton, went to Chicago. It was all tough, tough hockey. And then we got to the Islanders, and the Islanders were the first really experienced high-end team. The other three teams that we had played were more like us, battle, you know, physical play, and the Islanders had everything. And anyway, if you remember the first game in the overtime, you know, if we got by that game, I think the series would have been a whole lot different. But we weren't used to it. You know, we weren't used to being there. They were. They know how to handle things. And but the run we made that year was an incredible experience. And the people of Vancouver were amazing. The fans were incredible. The towels. And then at the end of the year, they had a little parade for us. And we thought, geez, you know, we didn't win, you know, like a parade. And the whole town came out, you know. So it was back then the team was, it was a big piece of the community. And the fans and everything, everybody was together. And It was a real unique experience getting to go to the Stanley Cup Finals and represent Vancouver. It was amazing.
Kurt Fraser is our guest today on Canucks Connected here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Your time in Vancouver ended the following season when you were dealt to the Chicago Blackhawks in a one-for-one trade with Tony Tanti. You spent a long time with that original six organization before winding your career down with Minnesota. When fans look at your stat line, they see 1,300-plus minutes in penalties. You were one of the toughest players of your generation. But a lot of fans, no matter how old they might be, Kurt, they look back at your trilogy of fights that you had with one of the toughest players of that generation, and that was Detroit Red Wings enforcer Bob Probert. The videos make it look like it's entertaining. I'm sure it might not have felt that way when you were duking it out with him. Would he be arguably the toughest player you fought during your time in the NHL?
No, for sure. He was a big, big man, and obviously very, very tough. But, you know, years before that, it was Terry O'Reilly, Bob Nystrom. You know, all these guys were tough. Ben Wilson. That was our job. You know, Smeal and myself and Thomas, we had to look after some of the offense, and then we also had to look after the physical side of things. And, I wasn't alone out there, either with Stan. And, you know, we had Tiger Williams and Harold Snips and Gathaw. I mean, we had lots of guys over the years that were very rugged, tough players. But for some reason, we matched up with these other guys very good, and we ended up bumping heads a lot of nights. But it was fun. And it was great. It was great hockey. But back then there was a lot of guys that were big, tough kids. And if you didn't stand up to them, then you weren't going to be winning any hockey games. So that fell upon our shoulders to look after that. And, you know, back then it was hard and everything, but looking back at it, it was part of it. And games changed a lot now, but it was exciting back then to have those fights and have that rough hockey, you know. That style was great to watch.
Kurt, your playing days wound down in 1990, but it didn't take you long to stay in the game behind the bench. You've been a coach at various levels around the globe for two decades. It all started with the Canucks family. Fill our listeners in as to how you got into coaching and how satisfying it's been for you to stay in the game.
Well, I was very lucky. At the end of my career, the last 2 years I played in Minnesota, I was beat up. You know, you always want to keep going and keep playing and being a player, you know. But after 16 operations and just the style that I played, I just got worn out, I guess. Vancouver wanted me to come back and be a veteran player around a younger group that was coming in. And this is around 1990. And I tried everything, you know, to play another year. But I went and saw five doctors that summer, and they all said, kid, you got to stop playing. Like, this is not going to work out for you. You're going to hurt yourself permanently. And so just like, it's time to stop. I said, okay. So I went and told Brian Burke that. And he said, hey, come in and talk to Pat Quinn and myself tomorrow. So I go in the next day and meet with the guys, and they were awesome. And they said, you know what? Mike Murphy's going to coach our farm team in Milwaukee this year, and we'd love to have you join us as an assistant coach. And I said, oh, geez, I never really thought of that, you know, but all right. So I went down and I met Murph and sat around together, and then we got on the ice, and from the very first time I went on the ice with the guys, for some reason, I just loved it. I loved being around the guys. I loved the coaching. I loved helping the players. And then I had a great guy to work with in Mike Murphy. He was awesome. He taught me a lot. And then the following year, I was an assistant with Jack McElhargy. Same thing, Milwaukee, Vancouver's farm team. He was incredible. We had been together and played together in Vancouver. He was awesome. Again, another guy that taught me a lot. Vancouver moved the farm team to Hamilton. I stayed as the head coach in Milwaukee for the next 2 years. And then after my fifth year, I got let go from Milwaukee, and I joined Jack Malgard in Syracuse. The first year they were there, again, Vancouver's farm team. And a fantastic game being with Jack, fantastic being in Syracuse that first year, sold out every game. The hockey was awesome. It was just a fantastic experience. And then I moved on to Orlando with the Solar Bears for 4 years in the NHL, and then to the NHL. So all these people that I was with helped me out a great deal, and I was very fortunate that Brian Burke and Pat Quinn gave me the opportunity.
Kurt Fraser is our guest for a few more moments here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. You've been in the game for such a long time. You mentioned 12 years as a player, 20-plus as a coach. It's taken you to, most recently, China, where you're coaching in the Continental Hockey League. What has the game meant to you? And you've been inducted into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame, Kurt. What does hockey mean to you as you reflect on it as we head into the summer? And what's winding down is quite a very, very interesting time, not just in hockey, but also in sports and really in the world.
Yeah, you know, it's hockey has been everything to me. It's been absolutely fantastic. Being a player was incredible. But then the coaching side of things, like, has been awesome. The players, I've had opportunities to coach. The people I've worked with, you know, getting an opportunity to coach at all kind of different, like, not like levels, IHL, American Hockey League, NHL, the IIHF. I did 2 years in Belarus for and coached their national team. It was an amazing experience. And then now I wind up in China, and I spent the last year there. And anyway, it was a great experience, really good. Up until January, when this started, the coronavirus came out. But fortunately for us, it was time. We were leaving on a month-long road trip anyway, and we just grabbed everybody that was there with our team and left and went to Russia, where the league is based, out of Moscow, and stayed there and finished the season and then never went back. So guys left their stuff in their apartments. We had clothes there and left in suitcases, everything. But nobody was allowed to go back, obviously, and then everybody went home. And fortunately, everybody's in great shape. Nobody's got it. And we've been tested 3 times as a team, so everybody was good. We managed it really well. Our ownership did a great job. And we'll see where it goes from there. You know, obviously, the entire world is affected by this, and it's not good. And shutting down hockey has been hard, because I think we're also dialed in of, you know, coming home at night, turning on the sports, you know, and watching games and other leagues, other sports, everything. And now there's nothing. And this has been very difficult for everybody. And hopefully they find a way to get around this and find a cure very quickly.
We certainly echo those thoughts, Fraser. Hey, listen, this has been great having your story shared for Canucks fans of all ages listening. It's a nice reprieve from what many of us are dealing with right now, no matter where they might be tuning in. Thanks so much. We wish you continued success whenever you're back in the rink. And thanks for playing such a big part in the 50th anniversary of Vancouver Canucks hockey. All the best to you and yours, and thanks for being with us.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks, everybody.
That's former Canucks forward and BC Hockey Hall of Famer Kurt Fraser joining us on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Joey Kenward. Thanks again for being with us. Don't forget, later on in the show, we're going to reflect on some of the more significant milestones which occurred for the organization on this week in Canucks history. But right now, it's that time of our show that we look back at some of the more important trades made. It's time for yet another Canucks alumni memorable move.
Time for another edition of Memorable Moves, brought to you by Team Lofthouse Realty. Buying or selling your home? Go with Canucks alumni member Mark Lofthouse for your first assist on your real estate goals. Visit them at teamlofthouse.com.
For today's memorable move, we go back to nearly 20 years ago when the Canucks made a bold trade to reacquire one of the greatest players in franchise history. On November 10, 2001, GM Brian Burke got together with Washington Capitals boss George McPhee for a deal that delighted Canucks fans of all ages. Now, the Canucks traded away a first-round pick in 2002 and a third-rounder in 2003. Washington used that first-round pick to take Boyd Gordon from the Red Deer Rebels. He'd have a solid career, playing 13 NHL seasons. And then the Caps eventually moved that third-round pick of the Canucks to Edmonton, and the Oilers would use it to select tough guy Zach Stortini. In exchange from Washington, the Canucks got a second-round pick in 2002, which they used to select Russian-born defenseman Dennis Grott, who, by the way, never did even come over to North America. But the key in the deal in the eyes of Canucks fans was forward Trevor Linden. Linden had been a Canuck from 1988 when he was drafted second overall, and over 10 seasons he'd set numerous team records, and of course was captain of the club that made it to the 1994 Stanley Cup Final. Linden was dealt to the New York Islanders in 98 and spent time in New York, Montreal, and Washington before returning to his original team. Linden played six more seasons with the Canucks before retiring in 2008. And when his career was over, he'd be at the top of the franchise record books in games played with 1,140, and he was the highest scoring right winger in team history with 733 points. He remains the club's all-time playoff leader in games played, goals, assists, and points. He was a four-time team MVP, a two-time NHL All-Star. He'd be in the World Juniors and the Winter Olympics. He's also in the BC Sports Hall of Fame and the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. He was team president for 4 years. And of course, the biggest honor of them all, he was the second player in club history to have his jersey retired when his number 16 went to the rafters at Rogers Arena in 2008. The trade to reacquire forward and former captain Trevor Linden is today's memorable move, brought to you by Team Lofthouse Realty. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to hear from a former Canuck who many consider to be the first true sniper in club history. You're tuned in to Canucks Connected, profiling the Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected, a show celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. Here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected as we continue to profile the Vancouver Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650. I'm your host, Joey Kenward. In case you're not aware, the Vancouver Canucks Alumni Association launched their brand new website within the last couple of weeks. They're very active already on social media with Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. They all, by the way, have the same handle, at Canucks Alumni. But in case you haven't visited the site, it's easy to remember. It's VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. Okay, time to profile our next alumni guest, who set numerous records during his days as a Canuck, proving to be one of the most talented goal scorers to ever play in Vancouver.
The next alumni profile is on former Canucks forward, Tony Tanti.
Tanti comes in with a drive, he scores! Tony Tanti of the Vancouver Canucks breaks the shutout with 12:04 to go in the second period. The first goal of the game is scored by the outstanding goal scorer of the Vancouver Canucks, Tony Tanti.
Tony Tanti grew up in Metro Toronto and had an amazing junior career in the Ontario Hockey League, one that saw him break records held by Wayne Gretzky. A first-round pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, Tanti was dealt to Vancouver in 1983 in a high-profile one-for-one move for Kurt Fraser, who we just heard from earlier on in the show. During Tanti's days with the Canucks, the team didn't have a ton of success, but that didn't stop him from putting up some incredible numbers. He was named the club's most exciting player five straight seasons, and in three of those, he led the team with at least 40 goals. He was dealt to Pittsburgh in 91 and would spend time with the Penguins and Buffalo Sabres before winding his pro career down in Germany. He's the club's all-time leader in hat tricks and is just one of three Vancouver players to have scored more than 100 power play goals. Tanti and his family live in North Vancouver, and when I recently spoke with him on the phone, I started out by asking him who his hockey idols were when he was a kid growing up.
Well, like my biggest idol growing up was Mike Bossy. He was someone that I tried to play like, and I sort of watched everything that he did. You know, before that, that, of course, it was, I was growing up in Toronto. It was guys like, you know, Davey Keon and Norm Ullman and all of those, Ronnie Ellis and, you know, Boreas Salming, all those guys. And then, once I started playing myself, definitely I just thought Mike Bossy was a complete goal scorer, and he was actually a very good defensive player, and he was very underrated, I thought. Even though he's a Hall of Famer, I thought he was underrated.
Tony, like a lot of kids in Ontario growing up, you wound up going the OHL route. You were property of the Oshawa Generals, and it didn't take long, did it, for you to make a name for yourself in that league and in junior hockey circles in Canada. Talk about that first year of OHL hockey and how special it was when you look back on it now, so many years.
I got drafted. I was disappointed, really, when I got drafted in the fourth round of the OHL draft, and which is the best thing that ever happened to me, because it put a chip on my shoulder. Because I saw people that got drafted ahead of me that I thought, geez, you know, I'm not sure what's going on here, but it was the best thing that happened to me, and I went into Oshawa, and Bill LaForge was the coach, and we had, I think there were only three or four returning players at Oshawa from the year before, and everything just fit in, and I played the power play, I played this, got my confidence up, and, you know, took it from there, and I was just in the right place at the right time, and that really... You know, that really has to happen. If that doesn't happen, then, you know, it's a lot tougher to make it. But I was very fortunate.
What did it mean to be able to break a record held by the great one, Wayne Gretzky, when you did it, winning the league's rookie scoring record that had been intact from Gretzky in 1978?
Well, it was incredible. I mean, I got a telegram back in those days. I got a telegram from Wayne congratulating me at that time, and you know, I wish I kept it, you know, but you know, when you're growing up and you're in the mix of everything, you don't think about stuff like that, especially as a 16, 17 year old kid. But it's great, and you know, the older that I get, the more that I see what I did and accomplished. And 2 years ago, I went back to Oshawa, and they retired my number, which was quite amazing for me. I thought that was quite a night, and had my family flown in, and we were all back there together. And it was quite a night, and something that I'll never forget.
Tony Tanti is our guest today on Canucks Connected, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. After that record-breaking rookie year in the OHL, you were drafted 12th overall by the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. You got a chance to play just a handful of games for the storied Original Six franchise. What do you remember about stepping onto NHL ice for the first time?
Well, I definitely remember my first goal, and the neat thing about that was it was in Toronto, at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, and against Mike Palmateer, who I also grew up watching, and it was incredible. I think we won 5-3, and I was third star of the game. So it was whirlwind. And then I went to the World Juniors right after that game. And when I came back, I was traded for Kirk Fraser. And so it was a real. Those couple of years went so fast. And Chicago had a great team. I think they were first overall in the NHL. So they were going for the cup. And you know, Roger Nielsen was the coach here, and Mike Penny was the head scout. And they just thought, you know what, here's a young guy that they're willing to give up, and we've got a little potential, and we have to give up a veteran. And, you know, Kirk Fraser, you know, he was a great player. And, you know, so Vancouver must have thought a lot about it.
You came into the Canucks locker room fresh off of a season that the team had made it to the Stanley Cup final the year before. What was life like for you adjusting to both hockey and life on the West Coast? You'd been in Ontario your whole life. You'd been in Chicago for a handful of games. Did you fall in love with BC and the Lower Mainland as soon as you stepped foot off the plane?
Yeah, it was incredible. Well, the year before, I was one of the guys who I was called up for the playoffs. So I didn't play, but I was called up with Troy Murray and Jerome DuPont, I believe, at that time. And we stayed at the Bayshore, and it was a semifinals, and I just fell in love with the city back then. That was the first time I've ever been to Vancouver, and it was, you know, the spring. I think it was May, and spring days, and it was, and we just had incredible weather at that time, and I went like, wow, I didn't realize how beautiful, you know, some place could be, because definitely the East Coast is not as beautiful as out here. So, and then, you know, out of luck, all of a sudden, I get off the plane and you know, Mike Penny says, we've traded for you, and that's how I found out.
Tony, your first full season as a Canuck, numbers-wise, was your best ever as an NHLer. You wound up setting the club record for goals in a season with 45, which you had passed Darcy Rota, who had set it the season before. What did that mean to you, even just as a young guy getting your feet wet in the NHL, that I've just set a record for an NHL organization?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Again, those years are pretty, went pretty quick, and it's very humbling. You know, I didn't play major midget hockey growing up. I was, you know, just an average player, but I worked hard. And something just clicked, and what I kept going. And again, you know, for anybody, even young kids or whatever, it, you need the opportunity to play, and you've got to be in the right place at the right time. And then when you get that opportunity, you really do have to perform. And I think that was, you know, I would get a little extra probably leeway because I was traded for Kurt Fraser, first round pick, you know. But again, that only goes so far, probably, you know, 20, 30 games, but you've got to prove yourself that you can play and fit in.
Tony Tanti is our guest, joining us on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. After that season, you had been selected to play at the NHL All-Star Game. You couldn't, but I'm sure it was a childhood dream that one day you could play amongst the league's best at the NHL All-Star Game, and you had a chance to do that, Tony, in 1986 in Hartford. What do you remember about that, representing the Campbell Conference? Who were your line mates, and what were some of the highlights?
Well, I scored the first goal of the game. That was a huge highlight. And back then, I think, you know, the games were a lot. I think the score was 3-2, if you can believe that. You know, the games now, I think, are 20-19 or whatever they are. It was 3-2, and the first goal of the game was in the second period. But, you know, just walking into that dressing room, you know, with Gretzky and Lemieux and all the rest of them, it's just amazing. Teammates were, I played with Al Secord and Denny Savard on a line at the All-Star Game, and it was a great time. You know, our conference had the Edmonton Oilers, and, you know, we had Glenn Anderson, Messier, Grant Fuhr, Gretzky, Kevin Lowe. It was amazing just to be around those guys and know what it took to win.
Tony, during your time as a Canuck, the team didn't have a lot of playoff success. In fact, there were a number of years where the team didn't qualify for the playoffs. But when that occurred, you had a chance to go on the international stage a number of times, in fact, 3 years in a row, to play at the World Hockey Championships, to travel overseas and play against some of the globe's best. What were those experiences like, and what did it mean to you to be able to win a medal, even if it wasn't gold, to be able to wear the maple leaf and put a medal around your neck? What was that feeling like?
It was amazing, especially the places that, you know, the first year I went was Prague, and the second year was Moscow. And Moscow at that time was the Red Curtain. I mean, it was locked down and pretty you know, eye-opening. In 81, I don't know if it was 80 or 81, I played in the World Juniors in Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, as a junior. So just seeing the way other people lived was very eye-opening and a great experience. And not just being there, but being there for like a month, really, you got into what the people were like and what the culture was like, and I remember in Moscow running out and taking right in the middle of the red square, taking a team picture, and then running back on the bus and leaving, because I mean that was everybody staring at us, and it was just, I still got the team picture with all the guys right in the middle of the red square.
Tony, your time as a Canuck came to an end in the 1989-90 season. Team was having its struggles that year, didn't make the playoffs, but you were part of a high-profile trade to the Pittsburgh Penguins. What do you remember about that moment? You had already been traded before from Chicago to Vancouver, but that was when you were still as a teenager. What do you recall about that moment? How did you find out, and what was the overall experience like?
Well, it was tough. I remember we played Montreal the night before in Montreal. We flew all the way to Vancouver, and then when I landed, again, I was told when we landed that I was traded. I believe it was Darcy or Stan. I can't remember who told me. It was just a whirlwind. But, you know, it's part of, you learn pretty quick that it's part of being a professional athlete. It's you move on and you go, and you know you have to deal with it. But you know, we had great guys in Pittsburgh, and I knew Mario from the World Juniors and from All Star games and things like that. So and I knew Coffey from the same thing. Plus he grew up in Toronto, Kitchener, so I knew him a little bit also. So it is what it is, and you know it was the. You know, then you know it is a business, and that's one thing you find out, especially when other guys are traded. You know, I remember when it was probably harder when Patrick Sundstrom was traded, you know, for Kirk McLean and Greg Adams a few years earlier. That was probably tougher on me than me getting traded.
Tony Tanti is our guest today on Canucks Connected for a few more moments here on Sportsnet 650. You wound up finishing off your NHL career in Buffalo and then played a number of years over in Germany before you called it a career, but your best individual efforts came as a member of the Vancouver Canucks. 8 seasons, you were named the team's MVP in 1988. You won the scoring title for the team twice, and you were named the club's most exciting player on 5 different occasions. Is there one milestone or one honor in your eyes that is the most important to you, or do all of those accolades just sort of blend together as such a great time in your hockey life?
Yeah, I think they all blend together. I think absolutely. You know, there's no when you're traveling and playing and you know the fans vote the most exciting player, which is you know incredible. I think it was 5 years in a row, and I didn't even consider myself exciting. So that was just one of those things that I just went out there, worked hard, and you know, gave everything I had, because a lot of those years were pretty tough. You know, the team wasn't very good. We were losing, so the seasons got very long, and you know, it was good to be recognized at the end of it.
Upon retirement, you raised your family here in Vancouver. You've established roots on the North Shore of the Lower Mainland for quite some time. How important was that? Because, you know, as fans look at your biography and where you played around the world, you could have picked anywhere to call home. Why was being able to come back to the West Coast and call Vancouver home so important to the Tanti household?
Well, I just love the lifestyle out here. I think there's no place in the world like Vancouver on a sunny day. There really isn't. It's you can ski, you can golf, you can, you know, do everything in one day. Fish, boats, and you know, I know everybody says that, but it's true. Growing up in Toronto, you know, winters are cold and long, and yeah, everyone says it doesn't rain, but I mean, it's minus 20 degrees. You're not walking very long out there. So, I just think Vancouver, you know, and British Columbia in general is the nicest place in the world. You know, weather-wise, just culture-wise, and beauty.
Tony, before we let you go, two more questions. For those of our listeners that aren't aware of what Tony Tanti has been doing day in and day out for many years since his hockey career came to an end, fill them in.
Well, now I own a flooring contracting wholesale. What we do is we supply and install flooring for, you know, towers. So, we did the Woodward's Tower downtown. When one of my good friends is Nat Boza, who owns Boza Development, and I do a lot of their work, and they're great people, and I've enjoyed what I do, and it's brought something else into my life that you know, is gratifying, and I'm enjoying myself, and you know, I get to meet great people, and because a lot of the people on site are athletes. Who tried to make the NHL and just didn't, but they like to talk about the old times, and it's very gratifying, and it's great to have the old stories.
Finally, Tony, as someone who was born and raised in Ontario and is the kid of Italian and Maltese immigrants, having played in Vancouver and now having raised your family in BC, what did it mean to you to be inducted into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame not that long ago?
Well, it was again amazing. That same year, I got you know, my sweater was up in the Raptors in Oshawa, and then I got the BC Hockey Hall of Fame, and it just, you know, sort of puts a lid on what you've accomplished, and looking back, and when I get older, and you know, waiting for grandkids, and I can tell them and show them, and it's hard to explain. It's just, it's almost surreal, and it doesn't seem like it's, you know, you really did those things. Especially the older you get, you don't, you know, your body starts to get achy, and it's hard to say, geez, I can't believe I did accomplish all that stuff.
Tony, you had some amazing, amazing moments for Vancouver Canucks fans to recall and look back on for decades. Thanks so much for taking the time to share some of your stories and memories with our listeners today, and wish you and your family all the very best as the Canucks carry on in their 50th anniversary. Thanks for doing
this. Thank you so much.
That's former Canucks forward Tony Tanti joining us on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Joey Kenward. Thanks again for being with us. It's that time of our show that we look back on some of the more famous or rather infamous moments on the Canucks calendar over the years. It's time for another edition of This Week in Canucks History.
Time for This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery. Proud supporters of the Canucks alumni. Check out their great selection of award-winning wines at deserthills.ca.
Let's start with March 23rd, 1984, when Tony Tanti set a new club record on the road in Winnipeg. That night, Tanti scored twice on goalie Doug Sotard, including the winner in overtime, as the Canucks picked up a 4-3 win over the Jets. Tanti netted his 43rd and 44th goals of the season, and that would see him pass Darcy Rota in the Canucks record books, whose previous record of 42 had been set the season before. Also on March 23rd, this time in 1994, Pavel Bure scored his 50th goal of the season for a second straight year, as the Canucks posted a 6-3 victory over the LA Kings. That night at the Great Western Forum, Bure capped off the scoring with an empty net goal in a game that saw him put up 11 shots on net. The Russian Rocket also extended his goal-scoring streak to 8 straight games, a club record that still stands to this day. On March 24, 1989, Petri Striko became just the second player in Canucks history to put up 30 goals in 4 straight seasons. On the road in Buffalo that night, Striko scored a third-period power play marker on Sabres goalie Jacques Cloutier to reach the 30-goal milestone. Up until that point, the only other Canuck who had scored at least 30 goals in 4 straight seasons was Tony Tanti. Lots happened on March 26, 2002, as the Canucks played host to the LA Kings. Goalie Dan Cloutier stopped all 18 shots that came his way to lead Vancouver to a 4-0 victory.
That was Cloutier's seventh shutout of the year, and it established a new single-season club record, which had previously been shared by Gary Suitcase Smith and Garth Snow. Also that night, Trevor Linden skated in his 1,000th NHL game. It was Linden's 758th with Vancouver, and in the process, he became the fourth Canuck to play their 1,000th game in a Vancouver uniform. The others to do it before him were Dave Babich, Ryan Walter, and Pitt Martin. And finally, on March 28, 1971, the Canucks reached double digits in scoring for the first time when they hammered the visiting California Golden Seals. As they wound down their expansion season, the Canucks took no liberties on their opponent as they beat the Seals 11-5. Wayne Mackey led the way for the home team that night with 5 points, and that included his one and only career NHL hat trick. In case you're not aware, 11 goals in a game is a club record, and it's happened on two other occasions. Vancouver had an 11-5 win over the Kings in 1986, and most recently, an 11-0 blowout over the Calgary Flames in 1992. That does it for another edition of This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery. And that concludes another edition of our program. Thanks again for being with us. I want to again thank our guest alumni members, former Canucks forwards Curt Fraser and Tony Tanti. Hey, if there's a former Canucks player you'd like to hear from, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter. You can get to me directly by using the handle at Kenwards Corner, and that's Corner with a K. Plus, you can get to our radio station's account, which is simply at Sportsnet 650. Don't forget, visit the Canucks on their website. It's easy to remember, VancouverCanucksAlumni.com. And they're also on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all with the same handle, at Canucks Alumni. On behalf of executive producer of Canucks Hockey, Cam Barra, this is Joey Kenward saying again, thanks for listening, and I look forward to having you join us next time as we profile the Canucks alumni here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650.